welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, everyone. Hope this is a good day. Hope if it isn't a good day, we're going to make it a tiny bit better. It's Nicole. How are you? And you've reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Welcome to it. So glad to be here with you today. So today we're talking once again about long COVID. And sometimes I think, Nicole, do you talk too much about long COVID? But I really don't think there is possibly too much talk about something that is just emotionally and sometimes physically paralyzing people in their beds with fatigue, with brain fog, with different sensations throughout the body, headaches, difficulty breathing, pain in the touch of the skin. I mean, all told, long COVID may be the most uncomfortable affliction I've heard about in the TMS world. It's so many things, and they're so different, and they're so varied, and they're so unpredictable. And so every time I hear a wild success story about long COVID with this work, I am enthusiastic about bringing it to you guys. So we heard from Rachel. And, you know, Lisa and I are always so excited every time we hear from somebody from a different part of the world who's recovered, having never met me or Lisa or been in one of our groups. It is, it's pretty extraordinary. And so Rachel's story is sort of typical, but also there's almost no way to see anything as typical that is this dark. She went from a very serious and successful person in the world, both in her business and in parenting, and an athlete, a runner and a cyclist, to a person who was basically in her bed, stricken with fear. Her physical symptoms included terrible pain in her body, physical burning sensations in her skin, Raynaud's in her hand and feet. Her hands would turn white, her feet would turn white and then purple and blister up. Rachel was feeling what I guess is being called the COVID strangle, where it felt like something was wrapped around her neck that she couldn't swallow or breathe. She had ridiculous fatigue to the point where she was almost unable sometimes to get out of bed. And she just was really depressed and really anxious about the whole thing, as anyone would be. And so so Rachel found my work through, wait for it, a long COVID group. And so she was quick to mention this, and I want to mention this too. These online support groups get a bad rap, especially from people who are TMSers once they've found out the solution for all of their chronic illness, that they think that the groups are a place where people sort of fester in their conditions and they keep themselves stuck there. But there are also aspects of these groups where people share solutions and they leave the groups. And that is what happened for Rachel. Somebody suggested a podcast I had done with Lika on long COVID. It led her into other podcasts of mine and then into living in the solution space, doing her journal speak and getting her nervous system regulated. And she is symptom free. Rachel is free, free, free. She ran a marathon. She is back to work. She's actively parenting. She's amazing. And so, and she's coming to us from the UK. I love to feature people from all over the planet because I want everyone to know, wherever you are, whomever you are, this is possible for you. So we're going to talk about that today with Rachel. I want to address one thing that's been coming up a lot for me. People are interested in step-by-step, how do I do this work? A lot of people, they get like a whisper of it. The best thing I can tell you is it's a one-time fee to take my online course, Freedom from Chronic Pain. It teaches you everything. It brings you through with original reading and writing exercises, videos, audios, audio meditation, art therapy exercises. You will be, by the end of it, completely on the road to recovery because you will have learned everything you need to learn about doing my work. So if you're interested in that course, we've done everything we can with my team to make it affordable. It's just a one-time fee, and you download the course and you can keep it forever. So you can do it as many times as you want. Just go to thecureforchronicpain.com. You can get the first lesson for free. on the homepage. And then, of course, if you would like to take the course, just click on courses. You can choose that, which is Freedom from Chronic Pain. And if you're more familiar with this work and you want to target specifically your anxiety, I have Freedom from an Anxious Life. So I've just been getting whenever I get tons of questions about one thing, I like to take a moment on the podcast to address it. So there you go. All right, my loves. Well, let's not spend too much time on these housekeeping items. Let's get right to our talk with Rachel, an incredibly inspiring story of recovery from a really dark place that I hope will inspire you as well. So today I am here with Rachel. Welcome, Rachel.
Hello. Hi.
I'm well. I'm so thrilled to be here. So before we hopped on air, Rachel and I were just talking about how many people need to hear this. And one thing that Rachel just said to me that really resonates is she was on some long COVID support groups and she wrote a post, "Does anyone ever recover?" And nobody wrote back. And what kind of devastation must that have felt like? So we're here today to bring some hope and some living in the solution, as we always are. And so, Rachel, why don't you just start wherever you'd like and tell us the story of your long COVID journey?
Sure. Okay. I mean, I always think that there's COVID, and actually I need to kind of go back slightly to before COVID, because yeah, it's about kind of what my life was like in the run-up. And actually at the time, if you'd have asked me, I'd have said it was great. I was really busy. I was working really hard. I had loads on. I was training for a marathon. I was cycling. I was traveling. But actually, having unpicked it, I realized now that I was maybe too busy, too cognitively overloaded, failing to necessarily manage my emotions. And a big one, I run workshops, and so I'm always kind of doing workshops, performing, standing in front of people. And I kind of realized now I was operating a bit in fear of, you know, would people give me bad feedback, would they like me, you know, right, would I let them down? But if you'd have asked me at the time, I'd have said it was the best life ever. And then obviously the pandemic hit. It's funny, I've been rereading, I diarized things, I've been rereading my notes in terms of the pandemic, and it just sounds now like it was an incredible experience, wasn't it? I don't know, just suddenly like an apocalypse. Yeah. Where everyone stayed in their homes, and I think at the time I thought I was taking it in my strides, all my work got cancelled. But I eventually then converted to Zoom. I now realized that actually then again there was fear. And I was angry because I wasn't getting any financial support from our government, and I was having to homeschool, and I was a single parent, and I was trying to convert to Zoom. And then I got COVID towards the end of December, and I sort of knew that I was gonna get it because my daughter's dad had got it, and he'd rung to say he'd had it, and he'd just delivered her back home. And so that kind of was going on, and then I had to take her to the airport to get tested. And again, that was like an apocalypse, all these people, yeah, in suits, not letting you even get out of the vehicle, posting you thing through the window for you to put up their nose, and then you know, sent it back. And then I knew that I had COVID at the point where she tested positive, and I got the text. I was delivering a workshop on Zoom, and I just felt this awful physical out of body experience that I think at the time I thought it was just neurological. I thought, you know, I don't know, I thought there was something very, very wrong. And then I tested, and it was fairly mild, you know. I rang the school and isolated her in our class, isolated, and it was over Christmas. And I probably had worse flus.
Yeah. A lot of people say that their COVID was certainly, especially even people with really severe long COVID, they're like, my COVID infection was like whatever. Yeah. It wasn't even that bad.
Yeah, exactly. Once I got over the should I cancel work, yes, I should, I actually quite enjoyed it. we kind of stayed in the house and we watched lots of episodes, just me and my daughter, of different films and trilogies. And it was coming up to Christmas and we ate lots of pizza and takeaway. And I quite enjoyed it. And then eventually I got out and it was funny because we'd isolated our whole class. So I think other people enjoyed it because I got loads of messages from people going, thank you. I didn't really want grandma and the family for Christmas. And now we've
Hilarious.
got to stay on our own. So yeah, once I got over there, you know, I've got this thing that's closed the world down. I actually quite enjoyed it. And once I got over the, you know, everyone else is isolating on my part, I think I got, you know, I quite enjoyed it. And I went back to life and I drank a bit much for Christmas, maybe went back to marathon training. And I do remember my mum saying, be careful, you may get post-viral fatigue. And I went, no, I'm all right. I'm really fit nowadays, mum. It'll be all right. And then about a week or two, I suddenly realized I was sleeping a lot, brain fog like I've never known. It's like the 3rd or 4th of January. I was on a phone call with a client and I realized I just couldn't think. I just didn't know what on earth was going on. I slept, I think, for, you know, most of that day, felt a bit better, and then crashed. And I've never crashed. It was the most frightening experience. You know, the next kind of months were just the most frightening experience I've ever had, where I'd be really ill for a couple of weeks and then I'd get better and then I'd kind of go back to normal life, do a bit of exercise, and then a week later I'd suddenly feel really ill again. And I had what they now I think call boom and bust, and these awful like pins and needles, awful anxiety, dizzy, derealization, feeling sick. Very physical. Like I looked in the mirror one day and I was grey. I think I didn't wear a bra for ages because everything just hurt. My toes were purple, blistered, swollen. Didn't sleep for, I mean, I slept for like an hour here, an hour there for a period of months. The worst insomnia. And I think the worst thing was all I wanted to do, I thought I'd done this to myself. So all I wanted to do is get my old life back. And I used to just ring my mum in tears, just going, I want my old life back. And she'd be like, well, you can't have it. And I was convinced that I'd done it to myself. And I can't tell you that I was suicidal. It's crazy even saying this now, but I just wake up and for a split second, I'd feel all right. And then I'd remember that I didn't have my old life. I had this new life that where I couldn't leave the house and I couldn't do anything.
Terrible.
It's yeah, when I
So
look back,
Rachel, I'm curious. Why did you think I've done it to myself?
well, so I think one of the things quite early on is that someone told me about this person that ran this fatigue course, and I went on this fatigue course, and the person that was running it had had ME for 7 years, and there were various other people with various
So
fatigues.
just so people know, the diagnosis ME is synonymous with chronic fatigue syndrome, just so people know that. Go on.
Somewhere in there, she said, oh, it's because you exercised. I don't know whether I picked that up from there or from the long COVID groups that I was then advised to go on. But somehow I got it into my head that the reason that this had happened was that I'd done exercise too quickly after getting COVID.
I
And I don't know
see.
whether the
I have.
newspaper reports also said that, but yeah, I was absolutely convinced that I
Huh.
wouldn't
You
recover.
know,
It was permanent. I'd done it properly.
I've never heard that, but it's to me so interesting the way things spread like wildfire. Because when you don't understand the genesis of something, it's so easy to just pick something. So it's possible that one person with no knowledge of the situation said, well, maybe it's because you exercise too soon. And then it's like the telephone game. Somebody else said it, then somebody else said it, then it gets into the news media, and all of a sudden it lands in your lap where you're blaming yourself, which couldn't be worse for TMS, you know, like thinking that you have misbehaved, the shame and the despair that is attached to mourning desperately your this life that you've lost, and then thinking you are the reason. My goodness, that is so heavy.
And then I think I also then cemented those beliefs because I then decided I felt a bit better, so I decided to go on my bike. And this is ridiculous. I free-wheeled my bike down a hill. I didn't put any exercise, I didn't put any effort in. My heart rate didn't go above, 70. And yet I then it was followed by a crash. And I think my partner at the time said, oh, I wouldn't have got on my bike. And it doesn't take very much to then, when you've been primed with these ideas and you or you primed yourself, and then you kind of test them and then it happens again. I now know
Because
that
the
that was probably
brain,
expectation.
exactly, the brain is so suggestible that and because when you are on that TMS bubble and the reservoir is up to here, not only is the brain so suggestible, your nervous system is desperate for a place to get you to stop everything because it thinks that you're so endangered out there in the world because of this whole concept that the brain and the nervous system see your repressed emotional world and your stored trauma as a predator to your life. So, I mean, this is something that I think I say every single week on this podcast, but it bears repeating over and over that if your nervous system thinks that it is saving your life by giving you symptoms, syndromes, and pain, it will. And it is a literal survival mechanism. So it seems as if every one of these pieces of information that you were receiving about shame, about guilt, about the bicycle down a hill, which couldn't possibly have exerted you, all these things are enough for your nervous system to take it and run with it and make you sicker and sicker. So it must have gotten pretty dark.
And I think that's it. And then also on this course, the lady talked about what she called, I think she called them tuning signals. And she said, before you crash, there will be something that happens. And she said, for her, it was her glands going up. And I thought, well, before I crash, every time I crash, I have this awful physical, almost out of body experience. And I actually now recognize it as just as panic, basically, as just this awful fear, but it's physical. And I've actually recognized it from about 10 years before when I had a scuba diving accident where I thought I was going to die, but I didn't put two and two together. I just thought, oh, that's what happens every time. So I saw it as a predictor. So as soon as that happened, I actually put it in a long COVID group and said, what do I do when I get these warning signs? And someone said, there's nothing you can do. You're going to get a crash. It's a predictor of a crash. The only thing you can do to minimize it is to, I'm going to get emotional here, is to go to bed. And I was so full of fear that as soon as I was getting these warning signs, I was then going to bed and battling down the hatches just, to try and kind of minimize what was really inevitable, which, of course, then you're looking for that to happen. And I think someone else tried to introduce me to pacing and the idea that you should do much less than you think you ought to do. And if you overdo it, and so I said, I don't know how to pace. I don't know how to divide tasks up because I've got work next week. And they said, how many days work? And I said, four. And they said, you're never going to be able to do that. I'd quit that straight away. And I then just got the fear. And because my work is performance, I stopped work. I just cancelled work for a month, which I'm actually quite glad that I did, but for different reasons. I did it out of fear. It actually probably was the turning point because it gave me space. It gave me space to think and to read and to learn and to discover you, Nicole. But I did it out of complete fear, from somebody else's hearsay, which now actually sounds ridiculous because they didn't know me.
You
But
know,
I was
we, but I
so full of
agree.
fear.
But I agree because, our path is our path. And for whatever reason, we need every ingredient. We need every moment of pain. We need every moment of frustration. We need every piece of hearsay because where we're going is interesting and unpredictable. And so somehow, so you're in this terrible state. I want to kind of repeat what I've heard. You're having clearly panic attacks, but you don't know they're panic attacks. You think that they are harbingers of this long COVID crash. You're having brain fog that is probably incredibly intense. You're having physical discomfort all over your body. You're having tremendous fatigue. What did you get any other symptoms? Did you have headaches? Did you have like what else? Anything else?
Pins and needles, which I found incredibly scary, headaches, quite a lot of gut pain at one point. I mean, the symptoms move and change. A lot of Raynaud's that went on for months and months, I think, or the light Raynaud's where my hands would just be white. and
Oh,
my feet
wow.
would be white, but also purple and blistered. And just a failure to be able to manage temperature. That was a big one that went on for a long time. I termed as and is in the news as COVID strangle, where my throat would just feel like someone was kind of literally strangling me. I'm demonstrating now, and my back would burn. That was another symptom that came and went, but came and went over months and months and
Wow.
months. Yeah, and actually
You had it all.
still now. I think I had most of it. Still now, actually, I notice every now and again the throat.
Well, that throat thing, just so you know, is such a typical T. I get it sometimes too. It's an anxiety response. It's some people call it a Globus sensation, and it just feels like there's a tightness in your throat, or that you can't swallow, or there's like a blockage right here. It's so normal. It's such boring TMS, but when it's terror, it's terror. And I always feel like I have to say this whenever I say the word boring TMS. Boring TMS is great news. It's a cell of fucking bration, because when you know that this thing that's terrifying you is something that I get on air and say, oh yeah, I mean, I get that sometimes when I'm, in a place where I haven't done my journal speak in a long time and I'm anxious, or I've got a lot going on, and so does Rachel, and so does so and so and so, and then you can say, oh, I'm not dying, and I'm not broken, and I'm not abnormal. I'm just a human being. And this is one of the ways that this mind-body system expresses itself. Some people get a headache. Some people get the Globus sensation in their throat. Some people get a backache. Some people get brain fog. Whatever. It's all coming from the same place, which is this nervous system response. So, okay. So, thank you for giving us the litany of your symptoms. They are devastating and terrifying. And another thing I want to say to people, because I always say this anytime someone reports a physical symptom that is obvious to the eye. So what Rachel is saying is that when she had the Raynaud's, her hands turned white, her feet turned purple and blistered. Like, I need you guys to understand that TMS and the mind-body system is so powerful. It's not scary, because we live in the solution here, and there are ways to change it and remedy it completely. But I want people to understand, it is okay if it is physically obvious to the eye. It doesn't make it any more difficult to heal. I have people write to me a lot and say, I get it. So and so has fibromyalgia. So and so has migraines, but my ankles are swollen. I see it. And I say, I know, I know. Like, I always come with the most empathy in the world, and also saying, please, it's no different. That person with their fibro is suffering, and you with your ankles are suffering, but it's not any different, and it's not harder to change it. And so, okay. So having said that, Rachel, what was the inflection point? How did you come upon this work? I know you say you took the month off work, so you did it for maybe the wrong reasons, meaning you did it out of fear, but it opened some space to have that movement and that curiosity. So what happened next?
Yeah, I think I mean I've obviously analyzed this a lot, and it's funny because when you've been on the journey and then you keep looking back, you keep kind of changing your perceptions. But I think I've narrowed it down to three or four things that were absolutely fundamental. And actually, the first was that because I'd taken this time off work, literally as soon as I made the decision to take the time off work, and I'd been agonizing it for about 2 weeks of should I, shouldn't I, should I, shouldn't I, as soon as I did, I felt better. And I rang my mum and I went, Mum, I just don't understand. It's like, how kind of ridiculous is that? That as soon as I've done it, I feel better. And we both just stopped and went, no, this is not coincidence. There is
Right.
something that is going on that is some kind of stress we didn't really know at the time, but it's connected. And I
Of
went,
course.
this is going to be a key moment. And so there was that. I just discovered a brain retraining audio program that I'd listened to. And so he talked about software, not hardware, and that you're in fight or flight. And it was literally like he'd been in my brain where he went, I bet you think it's permanent. I bet you think you've damaged yourself. I bet you think, and it was all these negative thoughts that I had. So I went, wow, how does he know? And then one of the long COVID groups published your story, your podcast with, I think her name's Lika.
Yes, Lika.
And for all my, should I, are the long COVID groups good or bad? and there's definitely some hysteria and all the rest of it. it was good in terms of discovering things that I had never heard of. So I listened to that. I remember it really clearly. I sat outside, I listened to that. That one didn't resonate as much, but I knew that if someone had recovered from long COVID, so could I. So that was key. But then I went back and I listened to three, and I keep sharing these three podcasts that for me were the most significant that were yours. One was Relapses, part of the healing process. And
Yes.
every time I feel like it was knowledge therapy was the thing that worked for me. Every time I got an insight, I felt a bit better. And so I just kept looking for these insights. So the relapses part of the healing process was about the fact that for me, it's not necessarily linear and I'd maybe have some setbacks. But if I could just look at, was I overall improving? Were the dips, I stopped calling them relapses, were the dips getting less? Was I able to do a little bit more? That was okay, and I'd get there in the end. And that was so reassuring. So there was that one. There was the pre-grieving one, which I think for me is the most significant, because I suddenly realized that with the work thing, I'd been pre-grieving work. So every time I had work coming up, I'd feel worse, and I couldn't work out why that would be. And it's because I was pre-grieving. I was looking at this date in the future and worrying about whether I'd be okay.
Right.
And so, that for me just made me go, I've got influence. I have influence over this. And again, I rang my mum, who was key. I got lucky. I got a good mum. Who was my supporter, who picked me up and went on the journey with me, which I think is so important. And I said, again, this is significant. We're going to keep coming back to this. And the third one was the symptom imperative and this realization that had to be nervous system and it had to be neuroplastic because the symptoms kept shifting and they shifted
Yes.
really quickly. And then I journaled. And what I want to say to people is I have not had any significant trauma in my life with a big T. And so I wasn't sure about journaling, but when I started and I divided it into past, present, and personality, I started to realize that my personality, in terms of wanting to achieve, operating in fear, wanting to please people, was actually quite similar to other people I'd started to network with, and there was something in there. And I also realized I was running a not good enough strategy, and I was trying to. My parents were amazing. My dad, I saw work really hard. And so I desperately wanted to for him to approve, to achieve for him. And you start to realize I think I've never really thought that I fitted in or was quite good enough. And you start to realize that there's these trends. There's
Yeah.
some quite functional romantic relationships, and you start to realize that they've been playing in and just my emotional responses. So that was actually incredibly helpful for me to change my view of the world and how I was looking at things. And so I started to enjoy the time off. I started to just change how I was living. I started to look at birds in the garden. I bought a hot tub, so I just sat in the hot tub and March, April, reading and learning about the mind body. And so that wasn't, it didn't give me everything, but it gave me a step up. It gave me a starting point to start to understand that I would get better. And I also made a decision that when I would get better, I would tell my story and I would help other people. And that again was really powerful. In terms of just that belief, I
Yeah.
think also is part of the turnaround. There's these touch points when you're ill.
No, 100%. So this is all so great in terms of belief and in terms of how things are falling into place for you. How did you find journal speak in terms of, were you very resistant when you sat down to write? Did you get that voice in your head that said, oh, not today? Or were you really enthusiastic about getting to the practice?
Actually really enthusiastic. I turned a point where someone said to me, you've got to be positive. And I think I nearly thumped them at the time because I just thought, how can you be positive when I'm in the pit and I can't get out and everything I've worked for? And they could have put it differently, but I think there was a turning point where I wasn't acceptance, or maybe it was accept, it wasn't resignation, but it was a this is just a phase. I'm going to
Yes.
enjoy it. I'm going to learn it. What a hell of a story. And actually, this is going to be the start of something different. And so, journal speak was part of that. I started to realize every day I journal speak, I did it in an iPad. I'd then click delete. And to
Perfect.
begin with, it was like, I'm really angry. But actually, that shifted quite quickly because I just had these trends, these patterns of behavior that I realized had been going back for years that kept popping up. So just I found it fascinating.
Yeah. I love that you're calling out the fact that you don't have big T trauma, because that is something I hear from a lot of people that is a barrier to entry. They say things like, my parents loved me. Like, yeah, maybe I had a couple bad relationships, or maybe I was like a type A, but I was loved, I was supported. This can't possibly work for me. And I'm always like, no. You don't understand. The very act of being human and the kind of personalities that most people have, these are most people who experience TMS are highly achieving people. I remember when I used to lecture with Dr. Sarno at NYU. I mean, our audiences were like heads of state and clergy and thought leaders. Like, this is not a weak thing. This is for people who want to go kill it out in the world. But that itself can be such input and such devastation for the mind-body system that is really, truly a primitive system. It wants to make sure you rest. It wants to make sure you draw boundaries. It wants to make sure you take care of yourself. And we are in a society, especially Western society, where we are like, nope, there's no time for yourself. There's no time for anything but achieving. Go, go, go. And that in itself, like truly, that could be enough to launch people into whatever syndrome their brain and their nervous system choose. And oftentimes, what the brain and the nervous system choose is what you will quote believe. And so when Rachel had COVID, and then it was mentioned lightly here and there, well, you might get post-viral fatigue, and then she's taking a look at that, and then it happens, and then the fear just barrels over you like a tsunami. Like, once anything begins that you have consciously or unconsciously dreaded or pre-grieved, you will believe it so hard. And when you're standing in the course of a tsunami, you don't exactly have the ability to be like, oh, no, wait, this is not true for me. Like, you are drowning in your fear and your belief. And now all the things that anyone's ever said to you are rushing in. And so just everyone who's struggling, just know that this is so normal and you don't have to be. And of course, if you did have big T trauma, there is always that. And there is always something to be very honored about those of us who have lived through real devastation. But it's just not necessary that that's your story in order for this to be what is going on with you in order for you to heal. So I love that you brought that up, Rachel. So you did the work and you were moving through this process. Do you have any sort of tips or advice before we get to what your life looks like now? Anything you want to say to people about like best practices or something that might help someone who is struggling to sort of really get into this?
I mean, I discovered meditation, which I would have poo-pooed in the past, as something, why would I need quiet time? And I listened to the same meditations every day, and there was something about consistency. I decided that I needed structure. I think I got lucky because at one point I thought I'd go back to my parents. But I couldn't work out how to get back there because I was so ill. They live a few hours away. But now I'm so glad that I didn't, because I somehow managed to look after my daughter. I outsourced the school run. I got rid of work for a bit. I lived on Deliveroo. But I somehow it meant that I had to have some kind of structure. And I think that actually kind of, so I had to keep some kind of independence for her. And I think that actually helped me have a bit of purpose, but it meant that I had to get up every morning, even if I hadn't slept, which mostly I hadn't. And then because I had to get her dressed and then someone else would take her, I was kind of up. So I sat in the garden. I created this morning routine where I got up, I got sunshine as soon as possible. I'd have a smoothie, I'd have some supplements, which I don't think did any good at all, but it was part of a routine. So I'd say having a routine, I think, was key. I read something about illness every day in terms of, something about mind body or something that I believed would help me, but I didn't do it all day.
Right.
I also had a reading list because I suddenly thought, I've never had this much time off work. There's things that I've wanted to read. And so I actually also just engaged in some films that I wanted to watch and reading. And I kind of want to say that when I said, oh, I enjoyed it, that sounds like it wasn't hideous. And it was hideous, but I made a very strong decision every day to decide to enjoy it and to look for the things that I could do and to notice the birds in my garden and to, specifically do things I could do. But also, I think because I only took a month off work, I'm so glad that I did that because I think the longer it goes on, the more you're going to pre-grieve. So because I had a month to stabilize, and then I went back for 2 hours. And funnily enough, 2 days before, I crash. And
Of
for
course.
some reason, I decided to do it anyway. I decide what's the worst that can happen? I'm going to deliver this 2 hour training session on Zoom. What's the worst that can happen? I know it inside out. And once I was actually there and performing, and I finished, I've just read my diary on it. I felt better afterwards. So again, it's that proof. So I'd say give yourself some structure. Try and achieve something, however small, every day. Try and get some independence. Get outside. I think fatigue can breed fatigue. And someone told me that very early on. So there's a lot of myths, and one of the myths is that you've got to rest like you've never rested before. And I'm not sure that rest is the right word because I see people that have been in bed for, years now, and they're not getting any better, and they're waiting to get better before they do anything. And I think you've actually got to get yourself somehow out of your comfort zone and exposure. At one point, I thought going to the supermarket would make me crash. Not even going round, just the entering it. I don't know, it messes with your head somehow. But you somehow, got to set some even just small goals to start to reassure yourself that you're safe. I've met some incredible people that have somehow lost confidence because your world suddenly shrinks. And I never thought I had anxiety. I now realize that I did actually have performance anxiety. It's just my definition of anxiety was an anxious person that wouldn't do much. That would be mine. And the exercise thing and the narrative around that and the narrative around pacing. I went on a 3 day course. I still hadn't cracked that. I still believed that I couldn't run. I could pretty much do everything else. I couldn't do that. Went on a 3 day course and she went, Rachel, you don't have to pace. You've got as much energy as anyone else. And I said, no, I need to pace. She said, where'd you hear that? I said, don't know, groups. And she said, no, you're keeping yourself stuck. It's not the activity, it's the fear of it. If you do something and then you're watching it and then you're waiting for the symptoms and you spend 24 hours doing that, which is what they believe that the PEM is, you've got 24 hours of what, and the unconscious is really powerful, even if you don't think you're doing it. And as soon as she said that, I went, I'm well. I went out for a run.
I love that. So I want to reiterate that because that's a really important point to drive home. It is not necessary. It doesn't mean don't rest, okay? It doesn't mean don't take care of yourself, but don't do anything through the lens of fear. You are not damaged or broken. You can go out and run right now. Like no matter whom you are, you can. Now the question is, should you? I mean, I don't ever say that people should push through horrible pain, but I can't tell you how many times. One example that I love to talk about, and it's funny because you're from the UK. So my uncle, my father's brother, the only family I have on my father's side, and my father died when I was 27, is my uncle Charlie, and he lives in the UK and he's been there my entire life. And he was coming over to the States to meet at the time, it was my ex-husband, who's one of my very best friends. At the time we were married, and my uncle is an incredible tennis player, like an intimidating, at least especially at the time, an intimidating tennis player. And my ex David is a pretty good tennis player, at the time. And they had a plan to play, and this is like my father figure and all the pressure and whatever. David's back goes out. He literally cannot get up. Okay. He's walking around like sideways. He's in so much pain. He knows all about my work. And he was like, fuck, like I'm too embarrassed to tell your uncle that I can't play with him. So my uncle arrives. David is literally like, he can't walk. The man can't lower himself onto a toilet. Like it was severe, but he was so embarrassed that he was like, I'm going. And he said he played the best three sets of tennis of his life. And so the only reason I'm saying that is because If you decide that you're not going to give it into the fear and you're just going to say, screw it, what's the worst that could happen? It is actually possible to do almost anything because TMS, by its very nature, is not dangerous. You are not sick. Yeah. You are experiencing the sensations of being sick, and they are as real can be. This is not in your head. You are not making it up. You are not creating it. When your brain and your nervous system decide to send signals, whether they are pain signals, inflammation, nerve, muscle constriction, nerve inflammation, anything that's happening, fatigue, crushing fatigue, it's real. But it's all coming from a place that can be circumvented with these tools. And it was just hilarious to watch him get on that tennis court. And we always talk about it. And it actually was a real turning point for him because he realized, wait a second, why am I continuing to give into this fear and this meaning that I attach? So, I mean, you guys can't see Rachel like nodding as if her head was going to fall off, but like, this is what is so true. So Rachel, as we round out this beautiful story that I think is so helpful, give me a snapshot of your life now and how it has changed from being that sick.
Yeah, I mean, there is another, like you almost, I don't know, you think, right, I'm recovered, and you think beforehand that there'll be recovery and then post-recovery. I spent a year in a kind of state of health anxiety. So even though I was back to normal, I had quite a few episodes, especially just after recovery, where I had the worst anxiety that I have
normal.
Ever had.
Normal.
And I listened to your podcast, and every podcast I listened to, regardless of whether it was pain or, you know, something else, you said it was normal. It ramps up. And I realized I posted my recovery story on a few Facebook groups. I started blogging. I had a few people back that said, wait for the crash. You're just in remission. And I don't think, I mean, that nearly toppled me. But then I changed my viewpoint, and I decided that if I could learn how to work with anxiety, it was like these stepping stones out. And I listened to some things you talked about in terms of just leaning into it, not running away, not fearing it. I read another book where she was saying, just notice that it's just thoughts. It can't hurt you. Just notice, you don't need to buy into it. And you start, and I stopped fearing symptoms at some point. But then what happens is I then got IBS.
Totally. Oh, God. It's right. So common. Yep.
I listened to your podcast with people that had IBS, and you realize again that it's just giving you the runaround, isn't it? And now I realize that actually I still at times get a headache, or I still at times get back pain. I don't fear it. I don't buy into it. I don't give it meaning. I don't go into a worry cycle about it. I don't think that it's happening again. I've had COVID since. The other thing I wanted to say is I've been reinfected. And it was a completely different story. And I think for me, the reinfection was the end of COVID. That's when I finally put COVID to one side, because it lasted 8 days. I went skiing at the end. On day eight, I went skiing. I was fine. And I got back to normal. And all that changed was the fact that I just told myself I was a different person, that I'd had many colds and viruses and flus before, that I was going to be sensible, but I wasn't going to, you know, fear it, and I was going to enjoy it. And I just popped out the other side. So that kind of proved to me actually that, you know, how much fear, I think, and me being primed with newspapers and the narrative had actually, you know, run the show. I did the London Marathon last October, so I'm definitely
congratulations.
Good. Yeah, and actually, do you know what? It's just given me skills for life. You know, at the moment, my daughter's got a sensory processing issue, probably autistic, we don't know. And actually, there's quite a few connections with nervous system there. And so it's helped me understand that. It's helped me understand my stress response and the things that I say. And so it's just, it's now, I think of it as a gift. I think of it as a, you know, my life is a bit more balanced. My emotional response to things is much more balanced. Not always, I'm human. My understanding of myself is so much better. My latest relationship is much better because I've learned about the patterns and some of my ways of thinking. So everything is better. And I just am so much more appreciative of life. But I do go back to some of those long COVID groups, and I do comment because I want to help, and I, you know, share blog posts because I want to help, hence also wanting to talk to you. And so you were a massive part of my journey, but you've been a massive part of other people's journeys. So many people. So I did want to reach out and just say thank you from the bottom of my heart. bit of a wobble there in my voice. It's
Yeah, well, I
emotional.
mean, there's nothing like a pinprick of hope when you are so terrified and so low. And when anyone ever asks me what is my goal, people sometimes use that kind of like, well, what are your goals? And I always make them laugh because I said my goal is world domination. And everyone think that's hilarious from a therapist. And I said it's not even really a joke. I want everyone on the planet to know that this work is an option for them. Not everybody is going to pick up what I'm putting down. This is not right for everyone because it's not right for their stage of the journey. I actually believe that eventually this is right for everyone, but you have to go at the pace you're going. You have to get every medical test. You have to have every low and every, high and whatever. But for each person who is ready, who finally can understand that, listen, this is so normal. The mind-body system is as literally as old as time. And that if we had an opinion or if we could control the way our nervous system protects us, we would every single one of us be dead. We don't have the capability to jump away from danger as quickly as we need to. And that's why the nervous system and the brainstem and all the things that control fight or flight are essential. However, when we live in 21st century society, the entire society is full of predators, whether they be our children or our bosses or ourselves. And so, if we don't understand this very natural process, we could get caught up in it for a lifetime. And so, that's what, not, it didn't almost happen to you because I believe your path was always going to be that you were going to figure it out. But I agree with you. There are people, especially in these ME slash CFS groups, the chronic fatigue, that are in bed for years, and they have no idea that they can get out. And so, I love your message. I love your knowledge that soothe factors, which is a term that Dr. Sarno used, are necessary. And so when Rachel says, you know what? Screw it. I'm home anyway. Let me read a good book that I've wanted to read. Let me see a movie that I've wanted to see. Like, that's important. I also agree with you because one thing you said was, I read something every day about the mind-body connection, but not all day. Because I do hear from people that they overdo it, that all they're ever doing is a podcast or a book or a blog or an article. And it's like, no. The reason I created the journal speak exercise to be a 30-minute exercise is because you do the 20 minutes of journal speak, you sit in your 10 minutes of meditation, and then go live your life. Go
Yeah,
do
you can
something
try
that,
too hard, I think. People try too hard and then actually it doesn't work. Whereas I remember the first time I thought I'd watch some comedy, and I remember the first time I laughed when I had long COVID. And it's medicine. It's
100%.
medicine, isn't it? Suddenly you realize that you're not thinking about being ill, you're focused on something else. And when you're focused on joy, when you're laughing, you can't also feel fear, I don't think. So I would definitely suggest that people do that. I invited friends, every day or every other day, just to come around for like 20 minutes or half an hour, just to feel connected. I think that was key. I took up some yoga, and again, that felt like I was rehabilitating myself. I found breathing. I saw a breathing physio, and she said, "Rachel, you're hyperventilating." I had no idea. But again, that's all part of the fight or flight, isn't it? I hadn't realized that at the time. 25 breaths a minute, I think, mouth breathing. She said, "Do you mouth breathe?" I said, "No." And I saw myself on Zoom take a big gulp. It's all part of the same thing. So I would do those exercises every day. I think you've got to also, there's commitment. People try things and it doesn't work the first time. There's something about every day committing to, creating a schedule. I'm committing to this, I
Well,
think.
you give beautiful advice. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you.
It was wonderful, wonderful to hear your story. You're going to help so many people, and I appreciate it. And there's nothing better than walking through this world and over hearing the same story. I mean, really, truly. Like, I remember just now when you were saying, yeah, I'm at the point in my life where once in a while I'll get a headache, or I'll get a little tinge of this, or I'll get a little panic. And I think, right, yeah, well, that's fine. I've got a lot of feelings. Or, you jump to your journal speak. It is the place everyone lands. It's the place I live. It's the place Lisa lives. It's the place and my children live. And that's the place that I want to get everyone to, which is you don't expect never to feel a sensation of pain. You just know that you know what to do. You normalize it. Everything is about speaking safety to your nervous system. And then you literally are fine. And being fine doesn't mean you never experience pain. Being fine means that you're a human being living a human life, which involves big feelings and big emotions. And that's what we're here for. We are not here to be like bored and medium our whole lives. We're here to love and to connect and to celebrate. And we're also here to grieve and to mourn and to be enraged. Like, it's all normal and it's
I
okay.
know. Do you know, it took me a year to not fear tiredness. Every time I felt tiredness, I would then feel the anxiety. And it took me a long time to actually go, oh, I'm tired. That's okay. That's normal. I might reward myself with a little nap on the sofa. That it is, isn't it? It's how do you start to learn as to what is normal when we're oversensitized? Such an incredible journey. It's such
Amazing.
an incredible journey.
Amazing. Well, I hope everyone got a little nugget of wisdom or 10 out of this conversation. And thank you again, Rachel, for being here.
Thank
And
you.
if you have enjoyed the podcast, so important, go over to iTunes and rate and review it, because everyone in these long COVID groups, anyone who shares an episode helps potentially thousands of people. So it's really, really helpful to rate and review it, and just go out and enjoy your life, because that's what we're here for. And so anyway, as you know, this is Nicole Sachs with the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye.